Borderlands is back. Shoot and loot your way through a mayhem-fueled adventure in Borderlands 3. Blast through new worlds and enemies as one of the four new playable Vault Hunters, each with deep skill trees, abilities, and customization. Play solo or with your friends to take on insane enemies, score loads of loot, and save the galaxy from a fanatical threat. Mayhem is coming September 13th on PC, Xbox One, and PS4. Pre-order now to receive the Gold Weapon Skins Pack at Borderlands.com.
To a pod of their own. This is episode 11. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined once again by my co-host Linda Serovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hi, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
So this week in Metsdom was a slightly better week.
Yay!
Which is the best you can say.
I'm just putting it out there that if anybody wants to put the Mets had a slightly better week on a pennant or a t-shirt, or whatever you got, I would buy that, because frankly, that seems to be just about as good as we can do these days, and I'll take it.
Or like the Arrested Development one, that I know is the knock on Bush, but when they put hang up the mission accomplished banner. We did it.
The 2019 Mets, a slightly better week. We did
mission
it.
Mission accomplished.
We went 5-7. Woo! Did we even? I think we did.
We did have a 4-2 homestand, right? Yeah, we did. We had a 4-2 homestand. We took 2 out of 3 from the Giants after the opening game disaster that occurred. Ugh. That was like another bullpen meltdown, and it was like, oh God, not this again. But then they righted the ship mostly for the rest of the week, took the final 2 games of that series, and then took 2 out of 3 from a quite resurgent Rockies team. You know, that Rockies team is no slouch. And they took 2 out of 3 from them. So that was nice. And, you know,
winning 2 rubber games. And, of course, Murphy was involved. Like, anytime they play Murphy, I just expect him to go off. And they actually contained him this time.
Pretty much. He went off once, right?
Yes, once.
One time.
Yes.
I'll take it.
In more ways than one.
In more ways than one. Yeah, that's right. I missed that because I didn't watch that game. But, yeah, there was a fight, guys. Not a real fight. Standing around and posturing, as most baseball fights are.
I always love the guys running in slow motion from the bullpen. Like, don't get there before it's over. Don't get there before it's over.
Just pretend you're going out. And Conforto just was totally over it. He left.
Yeah, like, I love how,
like, this is stupid.
It wasn't even going to be, like, I watched the replay of it later. Like, I didn't actually see the game. I watched the replay of it later. And I love how, like it wasn't going to be anything. Like, yeah, Desmond was clearly pissed. He, like, had some words to say. But then, like, Murphy just comes flying out of the dugout. And you're just like, oh, my God, Murph, go sit down. Jesus Christ.
Seriously.
It's Drew Kenyon. He's not hitting him on purpose.
Like, our controversies involve Jacob Raymond and Drew Kenyon.
I know, right? Like, everyone's very mad.
Why are people so convinced that our relievers are capable of hitting anything on purpose?
Right. Everybody's very mad about Jacob Raymond, Drew Kenyon. What a world. Yeah.
And I think Todd Frazier recently just said, he told Pete, I'm just going to stand next to you.
That's amazing.
Pete's the guy you want on your side.
No, it's
he
so
was
true.
Like, why are you so mad? You know what? I'm just going to stand next to you.
That's what I would do. I would just hide behind Pete Alonso and I'd be like, can you truck any guy that comes anywhere near me? Thanks.
Like, Josh Reddick can vouch that running into Pete is a mistake.
A big mistake. So yeah, it was a better week, and one of the wins was thanks to an unlikely hero, Jason Vargas, complete game shutout. Hell yeah, guys.
Just like we always knew would happen.
Yeah. Well, before the season, we all knew Jason Vargas was going to be the ace.
Yeah.
We didn't spend a whole episode trashing him. That wasn't a thing.
Never. I think it's worth pointing out that, you know, two of the players who people were, you know, trashing, calling for their heads, calling for them to be cut off the roster or whatever, are now two of the players carrying the team in Todd Frazier and Jason Vargas, and both are having quite the resurgence, which is awesome. Please continue to make me look like an idiot. I love it. I'm enjoying the heck out of it.
Yeah.
I'm going to be writing about Frazier later this week, so check out AmazingAvenue.com for all your print media edification.
Yeah. Well, and they even mentioned it on the broadcast tonight. They had a specific date, which I can't remember now, of when he turned it around. And it was after J.D. Davis had started 4 out of 5 games. Lowry was rumored to be coming back. Like, I think he was batting 150 at the time, and it's been, like, a complete 360. Like, when his job was in jeopardy, he did kind of say, all right, you know, I gotta start putting pedal to the metal and being prove that he was worth the playing time, and he did.
Yeah.
Although it also may have had to do with him getting a little more comfortable after having had no spring training to speak of and a rehab stint that was not especially lengthy. So I think, like, there's definitely some butt whipping happening, but then also just getting more comfortable, getting healthier, warming up, you know, it's kind of a mix. It takes a lot to turn a guy's season around that much. I feel like there are multiple factors on that one.
Yeah,
for sure. And, you know, Jason Vargas, like, you can say the complete game shutout, like, that the Giants don't have a very formidable offense, and that's true, but I think there's something to be said for the fact that he pushed himself and the Mets pushed him further than he had really been pushed before as a Met. Like, there's something to be said for the fact that he had been a five and dive guy and not throwing a lot of pitches. Even when he was pitching well, he wasn't really pushed the third time through the order. And this time he was, and he was still successful. So that's still, you know, kudos to him. And that's really great.
Well, and even he pitched 7 innings against the Dodgers, who were unbelievable. Like, yeah. Their offense was just relentless, and he still did well against them too. So it wasn't just the awful Giants that, you know, he held in check recently.
Yeah, and he's doing, you know, okay as we speak against the Yankees. And that's, are they still up to 8-3, Linda? Is that still happening?
There was a rally going. Yes, Vargy got out of it.
Yeah, Vargy. Hey.
Yeah,
Vargy's
go
been
Vargy.
facing his steepest test yet to challenge his, you know, string of good starts. The Yankees in Yankee Stadium in the second game of a doubleheader after the Mets dropped the day game. You know, Zach Wheeler got pounded pretty good. so, you know, we really needed Vargas to continue to perform. And he hasn't been, you know, sparkling. He's been working in and out of trouble, but the Mets are holding the lead as of right now. But, you know, a lot of baseball left. So, and it's Yankee Stadium with the wind blowing out. Hooray. So we'll see what happens there. But if we can get, you know, a split of the 2-game series with the Yankees, that's, you know, that's a win for the Mets.
Seriously.
Oh, we definitely. Mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished. We did it.
Oh, did Gomez just do a bat flip? Yes, he did.
Oh, boy.
Yee, yee, yee.
Yee, yee, yee. Heck yeah.
It was not a group dong.
It was not a group dong.
Just a solo dong.
Solo dong. That's okay. I'll take it. That sounds good to me.
Because one dong is better than zero.
Exactly. One dong is better than no dongs. so, you know, things are a little bit better in Mets world right now. They're still within striking distance of first place and even more so the wild card. You know, they're not out of it yet, but they have to keep pace with the Braves and the Phillies. They can't fall further and further behind, and this is a very tough part of their schedule they have now. They, after the Giants series, they kind of exited the soft bit of the schedule, and now they're entering series against the Yankees, the Braves, the Phillies. Like, who else is in this group of games?
The Cardinals.
Cardinals.
I mean, they're struggling,
right?
But the Cardinals are always the Cardinals.
Exactly. Like, the Cardinals have hit a skid and have fallen back in the Central, but they're still, you know, a team that's over 500, to be sure. So
yeah. There are not a lot of gimmies here. There's not a lot of easy ones.
So this time between now and the All-Star break is a key stretch for the Mets, and we will see what type of team they really are. But
they have to play the Yankees again.
Yep, and yep, they have to play the Yankees again. This time at Citi
Field. Fun times.
Sometimes.
Oh, so, yes. Sorry.
Have we reached double digit runs? Has it happened?
No, McNeil just squeezed one through the infield.
Hell yeah. McNeil just doing McNeil things. I like that. It wouldn't be an update, though, without one lol Mets thing. We will allot one lol Mets thing minimum per week. This week's lol Mets thing is Robinson Cano's situation. So,
womp womp.
Womp womp. Robinson Cano had a quad issue that he sustained running out a ground ball after everyone bitched about how he didn't run out ground balls. And
Thanks, everyone.
And then he didn't do a rehab assignment because the Mets seem really interested in not having their players do rehab assignments this year. He came back for one game. And shocker, he's back on the IL again because he re-aggravated it again, once again, running out a ground ball. Cool.
And even that was weird. Like, he was clearly hobbled after he hit a ground ball, stayed in for another inning, then they pulled him, and then they waited like 3 days to put him on the IL.
Yep.
So it's like, even when he re-injured himself, they couldn't handle it properly.
Why do they always do this?
He's got a rehab stint right now.
Today.
And apparently he's hitting fine, but also reports that he's not running particularly well, which makes me wonder, like, should he even be in the rehab assignment right now? Should he be, like, not in the rehab assignment? I mean, if he can't run, like, what's he doing out there?
There was that whole thing, too, I think, was it Deja who tweeted he was out taking grounders and looked awful, like he was winded.
Yeah,
and then later
Deja.
On, yeah, I think it was Deja and maybe Tacoma too. And then later on, Mickey was like, oh no, Robbie said he felt fine. Like, no, he clearly wasn't.
He's not fine.
Fine.
Like, they did this for the Yankees series with Cespedes. Topical, because they're playing the Yankees now. But, like, recall that they brought Yoenis Cespedes back for one game against the Yankees. He hit a dinger, and then he went back on the disabled list, never to be seen again. So,
like literally.
Literally, yeah. Never to be seen again. We still have not seen him. And so, you know, the Mets always do this stuff. They rush people back, and then it just ends up making it worse. Like, don't stop doing that. Stop doing that shit.
Well, I feel like they did want Cano for this game. That's probably why they were dragging their feet.
Yeah, because he's former Yankee and yada yada.
Stop. Revenge game.
Revenge game. Like, nobody cares.
No.
If it was up to me, the Subway Series would die in fire anyway.
Yeah.
I'm very
like, I care more about being the Phillies.
Literally nobody cares.
Nobody cares. Yep. Can we?
The Wilpons
except
care.
For Jeff Wilpon.
Jeff Wilpon cares very much about winning the back pages.
And Fred Wilpon.
But the fans on both sides, the Yankees fans and the Mets fans, do not care about the Subway Series. And it shows. I mean, obviously the day game was a makeup game, so we can't go by the attendance in that game because people, like, that was a last minute thing. But, like, the attendance in this night game is, like, I watched the first few innings and it was, like, not what you would expect if, like, people were hype about the Subway Series. Like, it is also a random Tuesday, you know, whatever.
Well, it's also, like, part of it is also that, I mean, it's just not, it's not a strong matchup. Like, there's I feel like there was a year or two where the Mets and the Yankees were both pretty good at the same time, and then it was exciting because there was actually, like, maybe the Mets would win. Isn't that something? But now it's, I don't know, it's just not... It's not a good fight. It's, I mean, to me anyway.
Yeah, they're like in two different weight classes, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And they're not in direct competition until, like, unless they both make the playoffs. Like,
yeah.
Unless they both make the World Series. So, like, it's competition for the back pages, which is all Fred Wilpon cares about. Nobody else cares.
Yep.
So, you know, on that note, we're just going to close things out on our Mets news for the week, just for a brief non-Mets thing, but a very important baseball thing. And we on the podcast just want to give our best wishes to David Ortiz, Big Poppy. For those of you who don't know, he was shot in the Dominican Republic and is currently, he was transferred back to Boston from the Dominican Republic. He underwent surgery in the Dominican Republic. And he is now back in Boston undergoing further treatments for his gunshot wounds. So please, please keep Poppy in your thoughts. He is important to, you know, baseball fans. He's important to the game. He's a really key figure, you know. I can't think of, you know, I remember back when we talked about Ichiro and how he's probably the most beloved, like, baseball player of, like, our generation. I would say Poppy is, like, number two.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, he's great. He, and to my knowledge, seems like a super just good dude, really loves baseball. And, yeah, sending him good thoughts and best wishes.
Yep. So yep. Far, like, the reports seem to be good.
Trending
that
in
he
the
was
right
up
direction.
And walking. Yeah, trending in the right direction. So fingers crossed. Get well soon, Poppy. All the best.
Yeah. Watching Pedro Martinez lose it on the air. It shattered my heart into a million pieces. I couldn't take it. Like, oh no. My God. We wish Big Poppy the best in his recovery and hope that he can come back full strength to his, you know, broadcasting duties and such. So best wishes to Big Poppy. We will now answer some of your emails. So we will have another seventh inning stretch. A quicker one this week, but still a good one nonetheless. So we've gotten a couple of emails since last week, so we want to make sure we shout those out. Steve McGowan was reacting to our episode about women's merch, saying that he had trouble finding a pink Mariners jersey for his 2-year-old daughter. So he, like, you know, sympathized with the struggle now that he's shopping for a little one, you know, for the lack of selection available for women. And for, I think he said that he had issues finding stuff for his wife as well. So, like, yeah.
Yeah, Mets stuff, too.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and that's how you get more fans too, is like, I know for my niece, when she sees my sister wearing Mets stuff, she's like, oh, I want to wear what mommy's wearing. Like, that's how you get your next generation of fans. And if the selection's not there.
Yep.
And I've been pleasantly surprised with the quantity and quality of little girls merchandise. I spent the first like 3 years of my parenthood purchasing for a little boy, which is very, very easy. And it's been nice to see, I mean, just a ton of his stuff, hands down, perfectly fine. But then I've also gotten just his gifts and random other things, some of the girls' merch. And it's really cute. And like, some of it is even practical, and there's plenty of it in actual blue and orange, but with a little like pizzazz. I feel like if they need help with the women's merchandise, they should look to the little girls' merchandise for inspiration, because somebody over there has the right idea.
Yeah, for sure. So thanks, Steve, for writing in. We appreciate it when other people, again, we appreciate the validation when other people are like, yes, this is something I have also dealt with. It's nice to hear, you know, that validation from you guys. So thanks, Steve, for writing in. We appreciate it. We also heard this past week from Darison Gonzalez, who says they've never been a huge podcast listener, but they're a huge fan of our show, and they praised our unique insight. So thank you so much. We really appreciate the praise, and we are humbled by it. So thank you, Darison. They go on to ask, if you could pick one Met to represent the team in the All-Star game, who would it be? So how about you, Linda? If you could pick one, who would be your All-Star?
That's a good question. Obviously, I'd have to go Big Pete, who is actually fifth in the All-Star voting right now. I think the numbers came out. He's fifth in the first base All-Star voting. But, you know, for being truthful, it should be Jeff McNeil.
Yeah.
So, but my heart belongs to Big Pete, so I'm going Big Pete.
No, yeah, you don't have to go strictly by the numbers. This can be a combination of statistics and, you know, emotions. So, yeah, Linda is on Team Big Pete. How about you, Maggie?
Well, sort of a similar, like, I think Big Pete's kind of one of my first calls, but I'm going to go ahead and say Conforto. And again, I mean, I think the problem that's going to happen for Jeff McNeil is that he's too good at too many positions to, like, get that like spot selected. But Conforto's just been great all season, rock solid, and so consistent. And it's just really exciting to have him be healthy. And I think he really has earned the spot.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a great pick.
Yep. As for my pick, I'm actually going to go with Edwin Diaz. Despite his struggles, That he's had, even though, like, I know that that isn't controlled by the fan voting. So if I were to pick a position player, I don't know what Darrison's rules are because, like, you know, the fans only choose the position players. They don't choose the pitchers. If I were to pick one Met overall, it'd be Edwin Diaz. If I were to pick a position player, I'd probably give the slight edge to Conforto over Pete, but Pete is like a really close second. But yeah, Edwin Diaz would be my pick overall. When I was thinking about this ahead of the show, I ranked all the relievers by various metrics. And even though Edwin Diaz isn't like in the top three in the National League or anything like that when it comes to late inning relievers, he's still in the top like six or seven. So like he, in theory, if you like cut it off at like WAR or ERA or like, you know, even like WPA, which I sometimes think about for relief pitchers because they pitch in high leverage, Edwin Diaz is still up there, like would be at the cutoff for like would make the All-Star bullpen. He's like on the bubble, along with like Sean Doolittle and a couple of others who have been good but not like elite. But really, because bullpens have been such a hot mess this year across the league, there's not too many relievers who have achieved elite numbers through the first half of this season like Edwin Diaz did last year. There's really no one almost in that caliber now. The only one I would put up in that elite caliber right now is pretty much Kirby Yates. And that's like it. So Kirby Yates is like clearly the best reliever in the National League. And I'm strictly talking about National League because we're talking about the All-Star game. Kirby Yates has been very clearly the best reliever in the National League this year, I think. But like Edwin Diaz is right up there. There are a couple guys with more saves than him. I forget. There are a few more. Oh, God. I can't remember. Kenley Jansen is one of them. Yeah, so he would obviously be like ahead of Edwin Diaz on like the pecking order, so to speak, for All-Star relievers. But like it's not like Edwin Diaz is like 20th or something like that. He's like within the top 10. So I'm going to pick Diaz. I think that arguably it's hard. The Mets situation is hard because they have, I would argue, four players who aren't like clear-cut All-Stars but have arguments in Diaz, Conforto, Alonso, and McNeil. But none of those guys are like such standouts that they should make it over other guys in the league. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like, it's hard. The Mets have a bunch of like very good players, but not one clear MVP of the team. This is clearly the best player on the Mets player.
So. If Jake goes on a run, I feel like he has a chance because he has settled down. Chance. Yeah. So I want to put him on the bubble too. So
I put him like right up there in the five slot behind those other four.
Yes.
But he has to like, he has to have a bunch of good starts in a row to even have a shot at this point. But he can do it. I mean, if anyone can do it,
he can do it. I just wish the voting wasn't so early.
Yeah, I know. It's weird this year. They changed it. So
they did.
Different now. But anyway, that concludes our emails for this week. So thank you, Steve and Darrison, for writing in. We appreciate your emails. Keep sending us emails. We will do these seventh inning stretch segments as we get emails. So our email is aa.apodoftheirown@gmail.com. So please keep sending us emails. When we get back from this break, we'll talk about exploitation in Latin America and the situation surrounding that. So stay tuned.
Hey, I'm Spencer Hall.
I'm Holly Anderson.
I'm Ryan Nanny.
I'm Jason Kirk, and we're the hosts of the Shutdown Fullcast, your Avengers of college football podcast. It says here in the script I'm to riff on what that means, and basically what I mean is it's all already spoiled.
Every Tuesday, we talk about everything from cooking disasters to pro wrestling to unfashionable pants we wore in middle school.
We also do talk about college football every now and then, like mascot fights, announcers fleeing the booth early, and unfashionable pants that coaches wear now.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it should be taken, subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.
Hi, I'm Avery Truffleman, and I'm hosting Curb's new podcast, Nice Try. It's stories about how people have tried to design a better world and what happens when those designs don't go according to plan. Season one is called Utopian, and it's about the perpetual search for the perfect place. It includes cannibalism, fascist architecture, polyamory, hermetically sealed domes, and Kourtney Kardashian's dining room chairs. But, you know, not necessarily in that order. New episodes of Nice Try come out every Thursday. Subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.
Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own, episode 11. This week, on our social justice-y baseball type segment, we figure that we've been kicking around having this discussion for a while, but now it's kind of become timely with the Dodgers were named a finalist for ESPN's Sports Humanitarian of the Year. And, you know, this kind of made
quite an interesting choice. Very interesting.
This kind of made us and many, many others, we are far from the only ones, raise our eyebrows because they are a finalist for this award, despite the fact that they are currently under investigation by the U.S. Department of Justice for their activities in Latin America. Now, this is a complex and multi-layered topic that involves, you know, a lot of intricacies, a lot of, you know, moving parts. And I just want to preface this discussion with the fact that none of the three of us are amateur experts, prospect experts, or lawyers. No. So, you know, there is, you know, a lot of complex legal stuff that is surrounding this entire issue. And it's not just, you know, one particular crime or one particular legal problem or one particular activity that is an issue here. It's the interconnection, a web, so to speak, of bad things that are happening in Latin America regarding Major League Baseball, regarding certain ball clubs exploiting players. So, you know, right now, the aforementioned U.S. Department of Justice investigation is looking into issues of smuggling and how much the ball clubs in question, primarily the Dodgers and Braves are the ball clubs in question here, but there are others that are being investigated in this investigation, and MLB itself, to the extent that they were involved, is being investigated as well. Basically, Nick Francona of the Dodgers, formerly of the Dodgers, and others from other ball clubs handed over a bunch of documents as part of a big dossier that Sports Illustrated got its hands on when this first happened about a year ago, a little less than a year ago, like maybe like 8 or 10 months ago. And there is a lot in this dossier that, you know, people like emails where they just brazenly discuss, like basically openly discuss corruption involving skirting around immigration laws, you know, and things like that. And
I just have to share my favorite, I mean, and favorite in a bad way, because this is all terrible. You know, I am a great lover of spreadsheets, and I live my life through spreadsheets. But what I've never done is kept a spreadsheet of my employees where I track the level of criminality that I believe they are engaging in. And that is literally what the Dodgers did. They had a spreadsheet of 15 of their employees in I think it was all Dominican Republic, and kind of ranked them from like bystander was a 1 and then criminal was a 5. And that, to me, that's a sign that you are maybe going down the wrong path, yeah, as an organization. So it's, I mean, brazen is the word you used, absolutely correct. Like just open acknowledgement of the badness of everything that's going on.
We are committing crimes. I will rate the extent to which you are committing crimes. Like, what?
Yeah, you only committed medium crimes.
Yeah, I think they labeled it like levels of egregious behavior or something.
Yes, that's exactly what it's called. Levels of egregious behavior from minimal to criminal. And I like this. I just, the fact that that rhymes tickles me a little extra. Like, it's terrible. It's awful. And you know, the meme that we use in Amazing Avenue Slack, and I think most of baseball Twitter uses this meme when we refer to this specific document, it's the crimes.xlsx, like, crimes spreadsheet, literal crime spreadsheet. But most of it, you know, most of these crimes, and they literally called it a mafia entrenched inside the organization. And it mostly involves employees dealing with Buscones, who are the people who basically like help the players get smuggled out of Cuba into third party countries and then into the United States. And it's not just Cuba, it's all of Latin America. But the Cuban players, because there is an embargo between the U.S. and Cuba, the Cuban players can't go to the U.S. directly unless they, you know, basically like float over there. And so they can establish, they can't sign a player out of Cuba directly, but the Cuban player can establish residency in another country. They often use countries like Haiti and Mexico, where there's like very little infrastructure or ability to enforce these things. And the they establish...
Go ahead, the Buscones aren't doing this out of the goodness of the heart, their heart. They're getting kickbacks.
Well, the Buscones are mostly working with like as like go betweens with the players and scouts and such.
It's exactly.
The smugglers are usually like in concert with them, but the smugglers are kind of their own thing, and a lot of them are affiliated with like. With like drug gangs and whatnot, because they just want a piece of the action. So these are just bad crime dudes, and MLB is knowingly funneling money to them.
Yeah,
indirectly mostly, but really just mostly turning a blind eye, and then also just not turning a blind eye and doing it in the wide open. So it's. And the Buscones have a whole other set of abuses that they are kind of committing as well. You've got guys kind of working on all angles, and all of those angles are just terrible.
Yeah. And we shouldn't forget that the players we're talking about are teenagers. These are literal children that they're trying to buy, essentially.
Right. So not only are the Buscones like, you know, assisting the smuggling in the sense that they're not themselves smugglers, but they are connecting, you know, the player with the appropriate avenues, inappropriate avenues, as is the case here. But they're connecting the player with those people. But the other like big side of this, that's like aside from the smuggling angle, is like you said, Linda, these are teenagers. And the other thing that these Buscones do is they train them up when they're really, really young. Like some of these kids drop out of school when they're like 10 years old to focus on baseball. And they encourage like a very open culture of like doping these kids as young as possible when they're like not even fully developed. So they're encouraging them to use steroids when they're really, really young and putting them in these facilities to train them up to basically get them to sign, get teams to sign them.
And these facilities are not, there's zero oversight. To the point where, and there's a bit of a content warning just for the next 10 seconds, but like one of the facilities is run by someone who spent time in jail for sexually assaulting teenage boys that he worked with. Mm-hmm. And then he came right back out and kept doing the same work in the facilities. And MLB knew this, or like took active steps to avoid knowing it. And it's just appalling. And who is taking care of these kids? Like, who is responsible for making sure they are okay as humans and not just as commodities that MLB can package up and put on a t-shirt? Like, I'm looking around, I'm like, who is the grown-up here that is watching out for the kids?
Yeah. And I mean, Nick Francona recently posted a video, and I encourage you guys to check it out. He tweeted it out fairly recently. Like, what was the date he tweeted it? We will put it in the show notes and in the tweets when we tweet out about this episode when it drops. He tweeted it in early May, May 9th. He tweeted out a video where basically, like, there's an interview with there's interviews with a bunch of folks down there, and you know, they're basically saying like Major League Baseball doesn't care about us. Like, no one's helping us. We're trying to raise hell, but no one's listening to us. It's not a secret that people are afraid to take on Major League Baseball and that they don't really care about this.
And the players' union has no interest in, I mean, they don't even care about minor league players on these shores. They certainly don't care about amateur teenagers over in other countries. So lest anybody is wondering, like, is this a job for the players unions? Like, well, they would have to actually think it's their job before that would happen.
Right. Passan just wrote an article, I think early May, around the same time, May 9th, that the Buscones are pushing for an international draft. Like, that's how bad it's gotten, that they're begging Major League Baseball to do an international draft.
Yeah. And that's the latest on that is that they're trying, and it might happen in the next couple of years, but it's not happening yet. So we'll see what happens with that. I think that, like, Rob Manfred has said that he wants it, but I don't know what extent, like, how hard they're going to push for it. Like,
you know? Because, again, like, what MLB and baseball teams, their interest is in getting players to make money for them. And the current system serves that interest very well because they're able to pay relatively small figures compared to, you know, what they would be paying under other systems, relatively small figures. And, like, some of that maybe goes to drug kingpins, and some of it goes to corrupt government officials, and some of it goes to child rapists. But, like, it's the system to them is working. So there has to be, like, external pressure for them to see it as a problem. Like, why would they fix something that's working for them when their goals are just to get players for cheap? Done.
Right. And go ahead, Linda.
What did Manfred say during the amateur draft? Like, he praised the arbitration system, not the arbitration, but he was, like, basically saying, like, oh, we have these kids under control for a certain amount of time. Like, he was thankful that these kids were cheap. I can't remember what exactly he said, but if that's how he feels about these players, it's probably how he feels about, like, all the players trying to enter Major League Baseball. Like, oh, good, they're cheap.
Right, right. And, I mean, make no mistake, this is human trafficking. This is human trafficking. It straight up is. Like, there's not...
It's the definition. Like, the legal, technical, dictionary definition, all that stuff.
And like, child human trafficking.
Child human trafficking. Because, like, I know that most people, when they think of human trafficking and how we use that term colloquially, they think about, people being sold for sex. But that is not the only thing that falls under the purview of human trafficking. If you sell a human being in any fashion for labor or for sex or for other purposes, that is human trafficking. And that is what is happening here. And these kids are 13 years old, being signed by teams at 13, even though they're not supposed to be signed until they're 16. But we know of at least, I think Passan reported that we know of at least 4 instances of kids that were signed before age 16 at, like, age 13, 14. And that's, like, just the ones we know about.
And it's also, we think of the high profile international signings, and we think of, what Yasiel Puig went through was absolutely human trafficking. Like, he was essentially held hostage for a period of time.
Yeah. In a motel.
But what I think gets lost, and, like, are the really vulnerable kids who probably don't make it anywhere near the majors, and who don't have the publicity to protect them in a way. And so I think it's, there can be some feeling of, like, oh, well, they're being sold to play baseball, but then they get to play baseball and they get to be millionaires. And it's actually, like, we're talking about, like, the 1% that actually gets to play in the major leagues, make significant money. Many, like, the vast majority are just, like, left behind along the way. So it's not that, this hardship is necessarily going to be paid back through fame and wealth. And also, like, if it is, it still doesn't make it okay that it all started this way.
And keep in mind that a significant cut of the money that they make goes back to the Buscones. That's how this all works. Like, that's why they push so hard to get them signed, because they get a cut of the paycheck if they are signed by a team. They get a cut of the bonus and his salary. So that's, you know, that's how these things operate. And it's very shady and very bad. And for those of you who haven't, like, read or heard Yasiel Puig's story, he's probably the most prominent example of this. There have been plenty of others. Yohannes Cespedes
might be, yeah.
Yohannes Cespedes is one of them. But
didn't
Yasiel
he have to
Puig,
save his mother from drowning?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah.
And, you know, so Yasiel Puig is probably the most prominent example of this, just the most written about example, I'll put it that way. And so if you haven't had the chance to read his story, it's harrowing, and I urge you to. Because, yeah, this it's a very dangerous process for them, because these are, you know, in the view of both the Buscones and the smugglers, it's a very lucrative commodity for them. It's not a human being to them. It's these people are lucrative commodities to them, and they not only have to find a way for them to get from Cuba to a third party country, who they then have to establish residency in through shady means, so that they can be signed by Major League Baseball out of that country rather than out of Cuba to avoid the embargo. So it's like a two pronged dangerous journey that involves people who want to exploit them for money.
Well, I'll also add, like, certainly wanting to exploit young players as commodities is not unique to Latin America, but it occurs in a place where there is very limited legal protections for these kids. So yes, you know, American 13, 14 year olds are mistreated by coaches and overworked and all kinds of inappropriate things, but also, like, they legally have to be in school. MLB has rules that basically require them to be in school for certain periods of time, so that, you know, to even be considered, you know, it's, there are all these humanizing protections that exist in this country that don't necessarily exist everywhere else. And so what really has to happen is that an incredibly wealthy and powerful organization like MLB has to use that power and wealth to bestow those protections upon those kids instead of just taking advantage of their lack of presence.
Right.
So
exactly. And obviously, you know, all of this is not remotely a new problem. This has been going on for a really long time. But it's back in the news lately because it's getting brought up because of the fact that the Dodgers are up for this humanitarian award. It's like, what the hell? You're under investigation.
Allison, I was wondering, what is their nomination based on? I'm curious. I honestly
don't know. Like, what did the Dodgers do?
I couldn't think of anything. Did they do anything after the fires, maybe? The wildfires that were out there last year, maybe?
I'm rapidly Googling. Let's see.
Welcome, listeners, to our new segment, Allison Googles the Answer to This Question.
Yeah, I take no shame in Googling stats and stuff while I'm podcasting, so I take no shame in doing that here for this either.
Well, and our resident librarian can speak to the benefit of doing research whenever needed.
Exactly. We can always ask our local librarians for the answer, too.
Linda, how's the game going? Are they still up?
Barkey is done after six innings. It's still 9-3, and it's the top of the seventh. So all things considered, it's another quality start for Vargas.
Take it every time.
Yeah. So, you know what? Good for him. This was a huge test for him, and I'd say he passed. Franchise is consistent work in the community through the Los Angeles Dodgers Foundation.
Yeah, it seems like it's like local efforts in the city of Los Angeles. So, like, education, youth sports, and healthcare are increasingly reserved for the elite. Using our celebrity and the power of sport, we run and fund proven programs aimed at young, under-resourced, like, you know, members of, like, people in the city. And we have bigger ambitions on deck. So, like,
but, like,
that's
every
all fine.
Team, I think, does that.
Right. That's, I was going to say, like, that's special. All good. But yeah. That is, like, every single sports team.
Like, that's, like, the bare minimum that you should be doing.
Yeah. Like, when I saw it, I'm like, oh, maybe they did something with the wildfires. I don't hear anything about the wildfires in that statement.
No, it's just it's local efforts in the city of Los Angeles, which is all good. Don't stop doing that. But like, I think most teams, like the Mets, are pretty engaged in the community in New York. So I think that it's like not the only franchise that does these things. Maybe their foundation is extra effective. I don't know. Maybe they've raised the most money out of all the. I have no idea.
Maybe they promised to stop participating in human trafficking. And
yeah,
they,
that'd be solid.
Cross their heart.
Pinky promise. And one like side note, it doesn't, I tweeted about this, and this kind of previews a segment that we're doing in the future. Stay tuned for an online harassment segment that we have in the works. When this whole, you know, investigation thing came to light, in the recent, like, past year or so, during that whole thing was also when, you know, the Braves former GM was banned for life from Major League Baseball for other illicit activities involving skirting the international signing rules. So basically they were like giving out way more bonus money than they were supposed to be giving out per Major League Baseball's rules. And so, you know,
which I'm sure they felt the need to do, because do you know how expensive it is to bribe local officials?
And they are also one of the chief, you know, franchises involved in this probe. So that's worth noting. But during that whole time, fairly recently during this past offseason, the Braves extended two of their prominent stars for what was, in my view, pretty under-market contracts. And I tweeted about that and said, like, you know, in light of this, Albies, and it doesn't escape my notice that this is the same franchise that has committed literal crimes in the international market. And I got crapped on for 3 straight days and almost had to lock my Twitter account.
Braves fans are brutal, and honestly, I might have warned you.
It was bad. I wasn't expecting
it. Yeah, it was
it.
Really bad.
I wasn't expecting it, and not because, like, I am naive to how Twitter.com works, but mostly because, like, I don't, like, I'm not a very prominent person on Twitter.com. So I just, and I'm like, most of my followers are Mets fans. So, like, I didn't think that this would reach the audience that would give it blowback, so to speak. But it got retweeted by a prominent person. I'm not going to name that person. I don't want them to feel bad, because it's not their fault. They retweeted it because they agreed with it. But they had
because
a very large...
Right.
They had a very large following. And so, and this is like, and this is a preview of the online harassment episode, and we're going to talk about this in much greater detail in a future episode. But this is kind of how, one of the mechanisms of how online harassment works. Like, your tweet gets retweeted by someone that has a very large following, or quote tweeted or whatever. And then that's how, like, they all pour into your mentions at once. And it just, like, it's like a tidal wave. And so I just got dealt with, like, all sorts of crap and blowback for that, that I won't go into and I'll go into it in greater detail in a future episode. But, you know, worth pointing out that the Braves are, you know, part of this whole shady business, along with the Dodgers. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if no major league team is innocent to a certain extent. Like, I'm not trying to pretend that the Mets' hands are 100% clean here. I'm sure they are.
Well, and certainly at the very least, there is, it's an open secret. And, you know, everyone just sort of like quietly sits around and accepts it, which is bad enough. But certainly, I mean, look, do I think the Mets are particularly adept at bribery? No, they're terrible at it, just like they're terrible at everything else. But are they doing it? Of course they are.
I'm sure they are.
My lawyer would like me to say that they may or may not be doing it.
Right, right.
All of this, please add allegedly, to the beginning of every single sentence of this podcast. Like,
you know, all future correspondence will be directed to my attorney.
Allegedly directed to your attorney.
Allegedly
everybody
directed.
Else was probably just better at not getting caught.
Yeah.
Like, they probably didn't keep a crimes dot
crimes.xlsx
document.
Well, they're still just you judging their crime levels by the eye test. It's very old fashioned.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah. So meanwhile, this federal investigation is still ongoing, and we don't know the result of it yet. But yeah, these issues, even though they're not new and they've been going on for ages and ages, they've come to light because now finally the government is investigating, and finally, as a result, hopefully people will see some consequences for this and maybe something will change. I'm really hoping it does. And there was a recent Washington Post piece about this by Will Hobson. I highly recommend you guys check that out. Terry Thompson and Christian Wright also contributed to it.
We're going to link all this stuff, and yes, it is so rich and so interesting. And just like, pick one for each lunch hour this week, and it will be a solid read. You'll learn about so much more than just baseball. I learned a lot. Yeah. And it's so important that we know this, because they don't want us to know it.
Right. Exactly. Like, read all these articles that we're going to link. They're so rich in detail. There's so much here that is like both either outside of the purview of this podcast or like, you know, just, we didn't have time to discuss it. And there's so much detail there. So I highly recommend you read all of the articles that we're going to link in the show notes and in the tweets. And we will probably do a future follow-up segment on this, because this is not over. This is far from over. Once we hear, you know, the results of the investigation, once those come out, I'm sure more and more will come out about this. So stay tuned. We'll do a future update on this when, you know, more details become available. But in the meantime, we will finish up our show like we do every week with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about what is making us happy this week, baseball-related or otherwise. So, Maggie, what is your walk-off win for this week?
So, Linda sort of touched on him a little bit earlier. Not literally. That would be inappropriate. But my walk-off win is Big Pete. He just is, like, making my day every day. There was an article in the New York Times, kind of leading up to the Subway series, and we'll link it in the show notes for this too. But he's just like this super down to earth, likable guy, and he hits amazing home runs that are so much fun to watch. And it's just great because he's having a blast. Like, he's having the time of his life out there, and it's so infectious. I love how much he amps up the rest of the team. His bromance with Dom Smith is giving me life. Like, just everything about him right now is just what I need in a kind of Met season to, like, get me excited about baseball and just get me watching. He's so much fun. Thank you, Big Pete. Thank you for being you.
We love you, Polar Bear Pete.
He's just such a lovable goof.
I know. And have you guys, like, noticed, I mean, we've talked about it in the Slack pretty extensively, but have you guys, like, been up to date on all of his, like, fashion choices? Because they give me life, too. Like, all the different hats he wears, like, after the games in the clubhouse are amazing.
And when they call him Florida Man in Slack.
Because he's the quintessential Florida Man, and it's the best. Shout out to Kate Feldman, who has a special fondness for Pete, being a fellow person from Florida. So,
a fellow Gator.
Fellow Gator.
Like if Pete Alonso was, like, in the news for driving down the highway with, like, pythons in the back of his pickup truck, and he was like, I didn't even know they were there. You wouldn't blink an eye. Like, it would be absolutely, like, sure, he did not even know they were there.
Yeah, that would be 100% Pete.
Yep. Definitely. 100%.
And you would buy it.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I think... I listened to the most recent episode of our fellow podcast, Jeff Paternostro and Jarrett Seitler, for all you kids out there. Highly recommend that if you're looking into other Mets podcasts you want to listen to. That is a very good one. And they, in their most recent episode, I think Jeff described Pete as a Northern Florida gas station attendant. Who is meth, who is not on meth, but is maybe meth adjacent. I was like, oh my God.
Poor Pete.
We love you, Pete. This is all out of love. We love you deeply.
Well, that also calls to mind, though, one of my favorite phrases to describe Pete Alonso, which was from, I think it was in The Ringer, like, a month and a half ago. I have to find it because it was just one of my favorites, where they said that Alonso looks like the kind of guy who builds log cabins in his spare time. Or yeah. lifts log cabins in his spare time.
Lifts log cabins.
Or plays a log cabin on a children's TV show in their spare time.
Amazing. Amazing.
Oh, I found it. It was on The Ringer. It was like 2 weeks into his... Oh, it was Michael Bauman, who's hilarious.
Oh, yeah, I'm gonna link this one, too,
because this is just one of the more fun Big Pete reads on the planet. So, anyway, yes.
Now I can picture him, like, with, like, leaves coming out of
him. But, y'all, he would be so good. It would be such a great show. He'd be, he'd have total buy-in, which you need on a kid's show. You just have to be all in.
He would be all in.
Oh, he totally would be. He would sell it so hard.
Yes, I love it. We want to see Big Pete on a children's show. Lobby.
You get Sesame Street. Do your thing.
Big Pete on Sesame Street.
I know someone who works for Sesame Street who's also a big Mets fan. I'm going to go bug him about this.
Oh, do it.
Make it happen.
I would watch the hell out of that.
So would I.
Oh, my God. Anyway, Linda, what is your walk-off win for this week?
Well, mine kind of ties into that. My walk-off win is Jeff McNeil this week, because I think he came back off the IL last week, I think.
Yep.
And, you know, it's no surprise, I think, that they went on a winning streak after he came back. Like, he just adds just another dimension to this lineup, especially at the top of the lineup. And I feel like he's just so underappreciated. Like, he just comes, gets his hits, and leaves. It was like, even in the first game, he had a group dong, which we know he can do that, but it's still kind of a surprise when he does.
It's his first group dong of his career.
Yeah, which is weird.
Blows my mind.
Like, how is that even possible?
Every other one of his home runs have been solo somehow.
That's insane.
Yeah,
but I guess he's let off a lot.
Yeah.
And the Mets are terrible.
Yeah. So, also true.
But it's still, even with those, like, the statistician in me is like trying to not do the odds on that, because it's not a good time to be calculating odds in the middle of a podcast, but they're probably pretty low.
Yeah. But, like, and plus his romance with Big Pete gives me life. And so, like, I just feel like there's a better team with Jeff McNeil on it, and that they need a Jeff McNeil type player. Like, they didn't have that person who would grind out at bats and, you know, bunt for a hit if they need to. And he can actually do it. Conforto, you should not be doing it, Scoot. Especially with Arenado at third.
No bunts. No bunts. McNeil's allowed to bunt. You're not allowed to.
No. Jeff gets a pass. So yeah. Welcome back, McNeil. We missed you. We hope you stay home.
Yeah, because, like, when he dove for that ball in the first game and, like, kind of maybe tweaked his, like, shoulder or elbow a little bit, I was like, no, we can't lose him again.
No, we've seen what it's like.
We've seen what it's like.
Like, don't do this, Jeff.
No. So, yeah, we're very pleased to have McNeil back. My walk-off win, I'm going to cheat a little bit and do, like, kind of two walk-off wins. I'm sorry, everyone. I'm going to be quick about it, but it's my show, and I'll do two walk-off wins if I want to. because I had two very happy things happen to me this week, which is great. So one of them is that this past weekend was alumni weekend at the University of Delaware. I go every single year, and UD is my, obviously, alma mater from undergrad, and it just, every year, alumni weekend is the happiest weekend of my whole year, and it's just, like, I get to reunite with all my old friends. I'm still really, really close with my friends from college, and we go together as a group of, like, a dozen of us, and it's just, you know, like, a weekend just spent with friends, and it's just, it makes my heart happy, and it makes me smile. So that's my first half of my walk-off win is...
I love college reunion. College reunion is awesome.
Yeah.
I also love because you get there, and, like, all the booze they spent 4 years taking away from you, they give it all back in a weekend, and it's fancier.
I know, exactly. Yeah, like, with it's a weekend event, and the first event is Friday night, and that's, like, the big party, and it's called Mug Night. Although they changed the name of it, they call it Delibration now, but it's kind of like how when Shea became City Field, people kept calling it Shea for, like, 3 years. So I'm going to still keep calling it Mug Night for a while, because it was Mug Night for the whole time that I've been doing it up until recently. So they call it Mug Night / Delibration, and it's basically like unlimited alcohol. You get a cup, nice. And it's unlimited alcohol. So, you know, as you can imagine, debauchery happens. But, you know, it's so much fun. My friends and I had a great time, as we always do every year, and it's just so nice to, you know, see the friends that I see, like, fairly frequently and, like, hang out with them, but also see faces that I don't get to see that often, probably only once a year in some cases. So I really enjoyed it, as I always do. So, yeah, that's my first half of my walk-off win. The second half of my walk-off win, I would be remiss if I did not shout out the U.S. Women's National Team. Good Lord!
That was
13-0 today in their first World Cup game. I was already so hyped for the start of the World Cup because, like, other than Mets baseball, this is the Women's World Cup is, like, the thing that's nearest and dearest to my heart in the world of sports. And
that
you know,
a right drubbing. Yeah, that was.
I knew.
Where's the mercy rule?
Right? I knew going in that, like, Thailand was not a strong squad and that, like, the U.S., like, I was like, the chances of them winning this game are roughly 99%. Like, there's nothing to worry about. And I wasn't worried about losing. But what I said, you know, ahead of time was, you know, France, the host country, came out strong in their first match, winning 4-0 against a weaker team. And, you know, Norway came out and had a strong showing. So teams that are in the upper tier of teams went out and, like, really made statements. And so I was like, the U.S. really needs to make a statement. And boy, did they make a statement, y'all. They made a statement. It is the biggest margin of victory in Women's World Cup history. You know, and there was debate in the booth, like in the studio after the game, whether, you know, essentially should they have mercy ruled this, not in the sense of should they ended the game early, but should the U.S. have, like, you know, stepped off the gas a little bit and stopped scoring.
No, because, I don't know, that's not their responsibility. No. Their job is to go out there and play as hard as they can, and if the system warrants a mercy rule, then there should be a mercy rule. I'm not saying that, like, that, you know, that level of a lopsided win is necessarily a desirable outcome, but the responsibility should be on the organization and not on the players to, like, what, half-ass it? Like, what would that even look like?
Right.
Well, and then one of the commentators even said that disrespecting Thailand, like, I'm gonna half-ass it, you're not worth my time anymore. Like, no, right. They're playing hard, you should play hard too.
Right, like, they have to show, this is the World Cup. This isn't, like, some, like, friendly, international friendly that doesn't mean anything. This is the World Cup. They need to go out there and they need to show the rest of the world that they're the best, and that's how they do it. And goal difference matters in this tournament. If it didn't matter, it'd be a little bit of a different situation, but goal difference is the main tiebreaker. If we're in the group stages right now, and so there are four teams in each group, two teams advance out of each group, the number one and number two, and, you know, if there is some sort of tie in points, like, you get 3 points for a win and 1 point for a draw, and whoever has the most points at the end of group play after each team has played each other team advances out. And so if there is a tie in the number of points you have to either determine whether you advance at all or whether you come first or second, which changes where you end up in the bracket, they use goal difference as the tiebreaker. So the U.S. has to put up a deficit like that in order to make up, like, make an insurmountable goal difference so that there's no way that they would lose that tiebreak. So to me, it's like, you know, if the goal difference is a determining factor, then they can't take their foot off the gas. No, they should keep scoring goals. And they kept scoring goals. It was pretty incredible. 10 of those goals came in the second half alone. It was 3-0.
USA.
Yeah. Oh, it's just.
Didn't Alex Morgan, like, set a record or something?
She scored 5 goals, yes. She scored 5 goals herself, so that is a tie for the record, Michelle Akers.
Oh, a tie.
I don't know if it's the, like, record, like, in all of women's soccer. I know that it's, like, a United States national team record. Michelle Akers also once scored 5 goals in a game. But yeah, so 5 goals in one game for Alex Morgan, the GOAT. Freaking love her. Yeah, so it was a really, really great opening game for the U.S., set the tone. And I mean, obviously, it's like a weaker opponent, so it's hard to take too many takeaways. But to me, they looked ready. They looked crisp. They looked sharp. They were connecting their passes. They were finishing every scoring opportunity they had. Like, they looked ready to go. So I'm so, so pumped for the rest of this tournament. And it's just so nice to watch a sports team I root for actually, like, be competent and be really good at the sport.
I wouldn't know.
No, wouldn't know. I don't know what that's like.
Yeah, it's like, it's almost like, I mean, I will love the, just like the Mets, I will love the U.S. Women's National Team, win or lose, no matter what. But I always say that they're a nice vacation from the Mets sometimes, just to root for a team that's kind of like a Yankees equivalent powerhouse. Like, they're the Yankees of international women's soccer. Like, they are the world class. So, you know, I'm so pumped for the rest of this tournament. I hope that they can go back to back, which has only been done one other time before in the Women's World Cup, get their fourth World Cup. That would be so, so great. So, yep. That does it for our show this week. You can go to amazingavenue.com to read all of our fantastic content. Like Maggie said near the top of the show, she's going to be writing a piece about Todd Frazier soon and his resurgence. So go check that out, along with all of our game recaps, news pieces, analysis pieces, etc. You can follow Amazing Avenue on all of the social medias, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can follow us on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow me on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Servich.
Where are you, Maggie?
At Maggie162.
Follow each of us on Twitter. Follow the show on Twitter. Please subscribe to the Amazing Avenue audio group of shows on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe and also rate and review the podcast. It really, really helps. And in the meantime, the original music for this show is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasting.